Coming up on KUCB News, UNC is still waiting on the state before launching its inmate work program, and another Coast Guard member has died, this time in Homer. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Monday, February 4th, 2019. This winter, UNC had planned to employ four prison inmates at its Unalaska fish processing plant, but for now, company officials say the program remains in limbo following the election of Governor Mike Dunleavy.
We are just basically on standby right now, and we have been waiting for the DOC.
Ferdy Lopez is UNC's local safety and security manager. He says the State Department of Corrections has not provided an answer as to whether it'll continue its work release program under new commissioner Nancy Dahlstrom. She was appointed by Dunleavy in December to lead the department.
We reached out to them, and until to this point, there's no clear indication if the program's going to continue here. But we are still optimistic that we will hear back from them anytime soon.
CEO Tom Enlow says the new administration may drop the transition to work program to cut costs or take the DOC's philosophy in a different direction. But if it doesn't, he says UNC will be ready to accept inmate workers at any time.
We're just as committed as we were before, and we're going to take all the necessary precautions we said we would before, and we expect the same kind of results.
UNC won approval from the Unalaska City Council last year to join the DOC program. It aims to reduce Alaska's high reoffense rate by helping inmates prepare for life after prison. Counselors approved the local program as a trial run that prohibits the participation of sex offenders, allows Unalaska to opt out at any time, and requires the state to cover all costs, including monitoring equipment that would dictate where prisoners can and cannot go. Although UNC is waiting for an answer on its program, the Dunleavy administration has already started making larger changes at the Department of Corrections. Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman has more.
In early January, a group of people with community organizations who volunteer inside prisons to provide reentry services met for a conference that was also attended by some Department of Corrections employees. And then they were unexpectedly asked to turn in the green badges that gave them easier access to the inmates they work with. Tom Sharkey, the Deputy Director of Institutions, addressed some of their concerns about changing policies during a lunchtime panel discussion at the event. He said his department is receiving direction from the governor's office.
The governor's office is micromanaging us at this point, very, very involved with everything we're doing. The commissioner, every time we come up with something, changing the language on a policy, putting a security thing forward, she has to take it to the governor's office for their approval.
Previous policies aimed at helping people when they're released from prison involved community input from reentry-focused organizations. But Sharkey said there is no community input into the process for changing these policies at this time. DOC Commissioner Nancy Dahlstrom says it's her responsibility to review every single policy in her department.
I have a team here that I use, and we go over everything from what the purpose of it is and are we accomplishing that, and safety of the community, safety of the inmates. I don't know that it would be correct for me to name any more specifics than that.
Some of the changes that have already been put into place include suspending the previously mentioned special access volunteer badges. Dahlstrom says it created security risks, though she couldn't provide specifics. Vetted volunteers are still allowed into facilities. Another change suspends the 12-hour day pass program that allowed inmates a chance to participate in community activities like church services outside of prisons. That pass violated the rights of victims to be notified of a person's release from custody. Dahlstrom says she recognizes the important role community members play in her department.
without the community involvement, we won't be successful. And that is something that I will continue doing.
Advocates understand a new governor needs to review policies, but have some concerns about the changes. Kathleen McLaughlin with the Partners Reentry Center in Anchorage says programs like the ones that were suspended were developed to help people more easily transition back into the community.
Many people don't understand, but one of the key feelings, the key emotions, is fear when going back into the community.
She says programs that help people build connections before they get out of prison can ease that fear. She says she recognizes the need to review departmental policies.
I am hoping, though, that we will take a look at actually what many of the services do and how they're designed to do things that are in the best interest of the state of Alaska before simply saying we're going to put them on the shelf or we're going to put them in the parking lot until a later date.
Janice Weiss runs the Mat-Su Reentry Coalition. She says she expected changes when the new administration took over, and she agrees with some of them so far. She recognizes that the department's main concern is security and public safety, and says that doesn't mean the coalitions and the department can't still work together.
DOC still wants to work with us. We still have very valuable services to offer to the folks who are either incarcerated or about to be released. And we just need to find out the best ways that we can do that without causing any antagonism or problems.
Other changes include rejecting a $1 million federal grant to use for reentry programs. Alaska was one of three states awarded the grant last fall. Dahlstrom says she turned the money down because it would have built too many costs into the department's overhead budget. When asked about potential cost savings for the department going into the future, during a December interview, a department spokesperson said all possibilities are on the table, including privatizing the prisons. She said that decision would include community input. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
A crewman from the Coast Guard cutter Hickory died last week in Homer, just days after another Coast Guard member had died in Unalaska. In Homer, 35-year-old Michael Kozlowski was killed Thursday in an accident on the Homer Spit. He died after a crane rolled over in a buoy storage yard, according to Lieutenant Commander Ray Reichel.
The details of the accident are unknown, but local EMS and fire department were notified, arrived on scene, and transported a member to the hospital. That member sustained life-ending injuries and unfortunately is deceased.
Reichel did not know if Kozlowski was driving the crane or working nearby, but he says an investigation into the cause of death is underway.
The only other thing that we would like to pass along is our thoughts and prayers go out to the family and the shipmates. This is a very troubling time, and we just greatly appreciate privacy at this time.
Kozlowski's death follows that of 19-year-old Ethan Kelch, a crewman of the cutter Douglas Monroe, who died in Unalaska on January 27th. The Coast Guard is also investigating Kelch's death with help from local police. Meanwhile, police announced Saturday that Unalaska's gun range had reopened after a four-day closure. While the range is located on the west side of Amaknak Island, where Kelch's body was found, it is still unclear if the closure was connected to the death investigation. Acting Police Chief Jennifer Shockley has not responded to KUCB's request for comment, and Coast Guard officials have declined to say whether investigators suspect foul play. The Juneau-based crew of a medevac plane also went missing last week, with the news hitting Alaska's medical evacuation community particularly hard. Pilot Patrick Coyle, paramedic Margaret Langston, and nurse Stacy Ray Morse took off from Anchorage last Tuesday to pick up a patient in need of a medevac in Cake, but their plane never arrived. Friends and family held a candlelight remembrance in Juneau on Friday, according to Guardian Flight pilot Eric Magnuson. He's a colleague of the missing crew member.
It's a job I love. It's a job I'm very passionate about. I'm glad to be doing it, and I sense that same passion in my coworkers.
Magnuson says Guardian Flight's crews remain grounded across the state as the company gives employees time to grieve.
We know that we've all been distracted and are, you know, experiencing a lot of grief over this, the loss of our coworkers. And so we are determined to plan through and talk through how to get individuals back on the job, but allow them to take their time to grieve and not come back distracted.
In some lighter news, 30 dog teams started a 1,000-mile race on Saturday in Whitehorse, Yukon, where, as KUAC's Lex Trinan reports, the weather was classic Yukon Quest.
It was cold in Whitehorse for race start. Cold enough for the fur-ruffed apocalypse parkas. Cold enough that mushers were strapping on foxtails, basically windbreaks for canines, on their male dogs. And cold enough that Dawson City musher Brian Wilmshurst finally put on long pants. He's known for wearing shorts down to about minus 20 degrees.
Love it. Yeah, it's Yukon Quest. It's what we do. We go around in the cold.
Yeah. That's rookie musher Chase Tingle of Two Rivers, expressing the thought of a lot of mushers before their starts. Another rookie, Deke Nachtgaborin of Fairbanks, had a similar attitude.
It's the quest, so as advertised.
But mushers aren't all superhuman mutants with preternatural resistance to the frigid temperatures of the midwinter Yukon. Preparation runs up to the last minute. And in the staging area, spectators could watch as racers made last-minute additions to their gear list.
No, it's going to be very cold tonight, so I am prepared for that. So I have a heavy sled, but I have a lot of gear.
Jimmy Glubling lives in Tok and is racing his first quest this year. He said that food is another key.
I mean, for me, I have all kinds of candy and smoked salmon.
And food can also be an extra boost for the dogs. Martin Apayau-Kraitan grew up in the Beaufort Coast whaling community of Kaktovik. He's bringing some high-calorie, fat-dense muktuk donated by community members. He's also got another Inupiaq specialty.
I have a parka that my mom made, and it's made with synthetic insulation on the liner, and it has a wolf ruff.
And finally, after hours of waiting, it's time to start. Racers couldn't be more ready. Here's former champion Brent Sass expressing a common sentiment.
It's just nice to get the heck out of here early. That's, in the end, for me, that's mostly what it is.
And now the show is on the road.
Three,
here we go.
Two, one,
hey!
Reporting from the Yukon Quest Trail in Whitehorse, I'm Lex Trinan.
Over the weekend, both of Unalaska's basketball teams finished the Seward Invitational in second place. The Raider girls started the tournament with a loss to the Hutchison Hawks before going on a two-game win streak. On Friday, the team routed the Ben Eelson Ravens 58-21. On Saturday, they needed an extra period to put away Seward 39-33. We will have a recap of the boys' performance later this week, ahead of the Raiders' final home games of the season. Those are happening this weekend against Tok. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.